morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me, Mike Cosentino.
Hola, Paco. ¿Qué tal? We're going to get his name right because we're professionals here on this this Democratic Perspective. Yes. We even though we forget to say the name of the show from time, but at Democratic Perspective
is a show.
Is a show. We have Klaus von Stutenheim right here.
Right here.
Right here.
Except that it's Stutterheim, but that's
it's Stutterheim, but that was close. That was close, Mike.
I knew that.
And Gary LeMaster, Silent Gary, is going to be calling in a few minutes. I had scheduled a show with a very well-known Middle Eastern scholar, Juan Cole, and he teaches at the University of Michigan, and daylight savings time happened. And he has a class that conflicts with him calling in an hour late. So today we're going to improvise a show with Mike and Klaus leading the way and Gary adding in. When Gary calls in, we're going to have to put on the earphones, folks, so there'll be a little bit of a disjuncture there. Let's talk about white nationalism. We have had a recent attack in, of all places, the place I guess that people we never would have thought would happen was New Zealand, where apparently they just don't have gun laws, any kind of gun laws. It's just their tradition.
Where the world goes to hide, I thought, New Zealand.
Hardly any crime, right?
Right, hardly any crime, hardly any anything. But they have a Muslim population of, 50,000 or so. It's very small, and they're Muslim folks from all over the world. For a community that size to lose 50 people is going to be a tremendous blow. And, of course, you can imagine the shock going through Christchurch in New Zealand, where they don't have any crime, they don't have any mass shooting. And, Mike, we have a mass shooter who's inspired a lot by the French ultra-right, and they use the term replacement, which you hear white nationalists in the United States chanting, you will not replace us. And the shooter, besides praising President Trump as an inspiring example of white nationalism, I guess, he used terminology from the French anti-immigrant movement. And what that means is that the same terminology circulates worldwide. We have the the terminology, of course, in France. We have that same terminology being used by white nationalists in the United States. And I suspect even other countries. And anyway, the revelation that people are having from this, folks, is that the white nationalist ideology spreads around the world, and the ideas and the phrasing and the plans spread from one country to another as the movement is kind of, it's not linked formally by any organization, but
as far as we know.
As far as we know. But the movements are sort of similar. I mean, they vary from country to country, right, Mike?
The Southern Poverty Law Center studies groups like this and does a very, very good job of it. And they have mapped, and they have interactive maps where the incidents have taken place. And it doesn't take a Ph.D. in sociology to see white nationalism has become a movement. There is no movement. So when a reporter asks, as I told you guys before the show, this horrendous story in New Zealand, it is obviously a story. 50 people killed by a crazed gunman and an Islamophobic gunman in New Zealand. Of all the quiet, peaceful, sheep rolling green hill places, New Zealand. I mean, less than half, 400,000 people live in Christchurch. Of the big cities of a
place. The biggie, right?
Yeah,
or Auckland bigger. Yeah.
It's the story, although as horrible as that story is, the story, as far as I'm concerned, is our president, President Donald Trump's reaction to the both from a gun law standpoint and from recognizing the threats to the United States. We have to think about this for a minute, people. I want to get on a conservative watch list. I want Democratic perspective to be considered extreme. We're talking about.
Hey, I'm watching you already.
We're talking about a
pretty far right wing myself.
You keep an eye on me every week. We're talking about a president that his number one job is to keep the citizens of his country safe and look for the threats. And so he doesn't believe that white nationalism is a threat.
No,
and when it is the biggest threat to domestic Americans that we have currently now. Forget ISIS, forget anything Islamic. The biggest threat to Americans right now is white nationalism.
And they seem to have many targets. I mean, one group shot up a synagogue, killed a bunch of people in Pittsburgh suburb recently. And it kind of goes on and on, but the ideology of the movement is also spreading. The idea that foreigners are replacing people who have traditionally lived in a place. The idea of an invasion of foreigners. The idea that Trump is planting that they're filled with criminals, ISIS terrorists, and disease-ridden, and all the rest of it.
The crisis at the border, you know, people asking for asylum to Trump. Is a crisis at the border.
Yes.
He used, I mean, and this is the other, as far as I'm concerned, the criminality of Donald Trump, the criminality of the Republican Party. He used the horrendous event in New Zealand to sell his border wall. In the same breath, in the next breath, he said, talked about the crisis at the U.S. border. And somehow that, and he connected it to, don't forget, this is normalization. We've normalized the horrors of Donald Trump. I haven't, but the rest of the media has. So while he says what happened in New Zealand is justification for his position on this useless border wall.
Before the show, Mike, and I'll give you a chance to lambast me here, is that he was more politically correct about the New Zealand attack than he was about Charlottesville, where he seemed to equate the white nationalists with the people who lived in the town and didn't like having them around.
All right, and as I said, he wasn't even close to politically astute. I forget about correctness. Political correctness has a bad connotation.
Yeah.
We're talking about politically reasonable. We're talking about seeing reality for what it is. The only change between Charlottesville and Trump's Charlottesville comments and Trump's New Zealand comments is that he wasn't quite as politically stupid. He didn't say anything that he equated. He just said there is no white nationalism problem.
Right. And obviously there is a white nationalism problem. It's not limited just to the United States. These attacks, people's focus is on attacks by Islamic extremists. But, I believe if the statistics are correct that it's hard to know whether some of them are political and what, you know, where does political begin and crazy end and vice versa?
Well, we're going to get to see a lot of that. This guy plans on defending himself, by the way. One of the New Zealand shooters is going to be defending. So this is going to extend. And we know what he's, well, at least from other people like him, other monsters like him, that he's going to use his self-defense as a soapbox, as a platform for his crazy as white.
He put a long tirade on the internet before he did the shooting, and then he videotaped the shooting of all those people, and it went up on Facebook and YouTube and all over the place.
It was taken down very quickly, but and it still spread like wildfire, and as it disappeared from one place, it reappeared someplace else.
But then it's kind of a media killing, isn't it, Klaus? I mean, he's doing it in part and not just to do it in New Zealand, but to broadcast it around the world and have his tirade
understood.
Well, the
internet has had some surprising effect, right? We thought it would be easier to go shopping and stuff like that, and it is all that. But it also immediately broadcasts around the world horrible things. And Trump has made legitimate something that you couldn't say out loud except around your six or seven crazy friends. Now you can say it out loud, and it's not taboo anymore. And that's what makes it so much worse.
The legitimization of sort of white nationalism is what you're talking about, Klaus.
Right.
And Trump has systematically done that in small ways and with a lot of nonverbal gestures, a lot of dog whistles, a lot of disguised things. He's encouraged it. And I don't know how much he believes it and how much it's just another Trump thing that he thinks is going to build him support. Like the wall.
I don't think he believes anything. I think it's strictly, whatever gets the masses excited. I mean, that's what Fox was founded on, right? Fox found a population, 20% or whatever, that are totally alienated. They're generally poor. They're certainly not well off. And found that population that had not been spoken to. And when Trump appeared on the scene, he basically embraced that population and made it his base.
Well, apparently, whether you're in the United States or you're in France, for example, a lot of people have been left behind by it. We've had spectacularly good economic development and increase of wealth. So generally in the United States, but a whole lot of people have been left behind. And whether they're in France or in what used to be East Germany or the U.S. or Hungary, a lot of those people have deep, deep resentments. I mean, change is happening so fast in the modern world that, even people who embrace change can't really keep
it's
up
actually,
with it.
It's actually much more true in the United States than it is in Western Europe.
All right, Trump is complaining bitterly about the whole media trying to blame the New Zealand shooting on him, when some U.S. media coverage has cited the suspected gunman's manifesto that called Trump a symbol of renewed white identity, and some pundits have argued that he has some responsibility here. So I want to ask you guys, does Trump have responsibility for these kinds of things, whether it's New Zealand or whether it's Parkland or Newtown?
The question I'd ask Mike ask both you guys is that it's what percentage does he have responsibility? Would this guy in New Zealand still attacked all those Muslims and killed them if it hadn't been for Trump? I mean, is he the governing reason for a lot of these attacks, or is he just contributing to the atmosphere that's sort of legitimizing them? He has a small but significant responsibility.
Steve, I mean, that's a speculative question, right? We don't know what he would or wouldn't have done. But what's clear is that what Trump is saying, as we said earlier, has legitimized this kind of attack, right? And I think he bears a major responsibility for it.
Well,
because this is not something that any American president has ever thought to say. And every American president before that, Republicans and Democrats alike, have absolutely rejected that kind of thinking. And Trump has made 180 degrees and legitimized it, and it's spread around the globe, and it's become cool, and you get all these imitators, right? Because everybody wants to be more spectacular than the last guy.
Keith Ellison says, "I think sometimes you simply have to yield to the objective evidence. We have the objective evidence in front of us, and that is it points to him being sympathetic to that point of view." And when you have the leader of the free world being sympathetic to that point of view, then as far as I'm concerned, he is causing it. Now, you're right, Steve. To what to what degree? I don't know, 10%, 20%, 50%, 90%? You tell me.
Yeah, I go 90%.
Really? Silent Gary, are you there? Silent Gary. He's off? Okay. Silent Gary is silent today.
He's doing what he does. All right, he's going to sneak up on us
He'll
in a minute.
Back.
All right.
So go on with.
Well, I'm asking you.
I don't think Trump has any.
Klaus weighed in. 90%.
I don't think it's anything like that. I think he has a broad global. There's a real question. I mean, there's so much advocacy of violence and hatred. For example, there's this fear. There are whole organizations out there whose purpose is to stoke fear of Muslims. All Muslims, some Muslims. They don't seem very particular. And there are people who travel around ranting and raving against Muslims. They all contribute to attacks on Muslims the same way an anti-Semite who's not violent contributes to an attack on the synagogue. I think it was in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Gary.
Gary, are you there?
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Gary. All right. Speak up real loud. Or
I will try.
Oh, good. Good.
Sorry,
so did
sorry
you hear
I'm
that?
Not one call, but...
It's my fault. I got the time zones switched, and I told him to call in an hour earlier, thinking there was only 2 hours difference between Eastern and Mountain. We've had the problem a few years ago, but it's been a few years since I made a mistake that bad about the time.
So did you listen to what we talked about so far, Gary?
Yeah, you guys have been doing a great job without me. I don't know why you want me to come in and mess it up.
I don't know why we do
it. All of us.
Yeah, but we just thought it would be more entertaining to have you on, Eric, so we get to put our earphones. What's your take on all this? We're talking about the responsibility of, Mike's talking about Donald Trump, but all the people who build up the fear of immigrants, they're all killers, psycho rapists, or fear of Muslims, or fear of any black folks or any group. How much responsibility do they bear, and how much responsibility, Gary, do you think Trump bears for the rise in white nationalism in the United States and, I guess, worldwide?
Well, I think Trump has always been a white nationalist. He learned it from his parents. So he's, you know, his racism goes way back to his childhood. And I don't think it's changed. I think his position is only allowed him to release it. And likewise, I think his whole disdain for political correctness, which, if you really think about it, political correctness is simply being polite. And his whole disdain for that has just released others to say what they've been thinking but were afraid to say. So if they were racist, you know, all along, they kind of bit their tongue and wouldn't make statements in public. Now they're free, especially with the internet. They feel a new sense of freedom to say and do whatever they like.
So, what's Trump's responsibility in contributing to this, or does he have much responsibility, Gary? What's your take on this issue of responsibility for people who create an atmosphere which leads to violence, but are themselves not, you know, mass shooters or something?
Well, I think his responsibility is largely not just with his refusal to condemn white nationalists at Charlottesville and in New Zealand, but I think it comes from the people he surrounded himself with. Stephen Mueller is a white nationalist. Stephen Bannon was a white nationalist. This sort of stuff has been, going around on the internet for a long time, and it's made its way into websites like Breitbart, and it's kind of the heart of the lot of right wing radio, Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levine, and so on. And it's kind of the basis for Fox News Channel. You know, it's a lot of hate the other. Your problems are the result of someone else. You know.
It reminds me of Goebbels.
Yes, exactly. One of the things that will explode any conservative's head is as soon as we start comparing Donald Trump to World War II Germany. But I think the comparisons are overwhelming. And I'm going to disagree, as you suspect, Gary. And I believe because of the man, because the shooter called Donald Trump a symbol of the movement, the question is this: would this have happened if Donald Trump wasn't on the world stage as Donald? And the answer is no, it would not have happened. In my mind, this is not something that would have just happened. New Zealand would have had this tragedy if it wasn't for Donald Trump. So therefore, I was not very good at math, but the tautology I see is that he is the reason for the... I want to wrap this story in a story. Donna Brazil, former chair of the RNC, is going to work for Fox News. She's going to work for Fox News. Right now Fox News is working overtime trying to protect Donald Trump from exactly what I said, because they know that the connection between Donald Trump and the horror in New Zealand is a one-to-one connection. So they've been working madly for the last 48 hours trying to keep this connection from happening. And then in the middle of all this, this African-American leader of the Democratic Party has accepted a job at Fox News. And her reasoning is you have to engage the enemy where they are. You can't retreat to your safe space. We're going to read a lot about this in the coming days. You're going to read a whole lot about this in the coming days, I think. Her going over to the, and I can't imagine what they're paying her, but I'm sure she's going to be set for life compared to what she made at the RNC. But on the other hand, she has a good point. You engage the other side in their camp. And, finding a way to do this with Donald Trump and his bigotry and his division and dividing Americans like he's being so successful at. Donald Trump is sitting in the Oval Office because he was able. Who knew how many of us had all of this hate? Who knew how many Americans would be able? That the other thing he's tweeting like crazy today is 50% approval rating for him over Robert Mueller. 50% of Americans believe the Robert Mueller investigation is a witch hunt.
According to who, Mike? According to which poll? He's very selective.
USA Today.
USA Today.
I'm afraid.
All right. Well, I guess my focus is not so much on Trump in himself as what can be done now that the white nationalist cause has kind of been brought to the public. It's now widely known. What can be done about it?
It hasn't been brought to the public. Look at the stats. Look at the bar graph. Three times as many people read and listen to Fox News as the number two news source, CNN. The bar graph, three times as many people. So, in other words, they're not getting there. That's why 50% believe the Robert Mueller investigation is a witch one. That's why 50%. That's why we're not marching on the White House.
I know. Fox News is kind of like an official news agency of Donald Trump at this point.
Like
Pravda or something back in the days of the old Soviet Union. And they would sometimes pretend to be a little bit critical, but they never really.
And that would be fine if the numbers were reversed. But this is where so many Americans are getting their information, and they're being lied to.
Yeah, but the demographics are that they're, you know, the demographics of the average age is 70 plus, I think, of Fox News listeners. I may have the stat wrong, folks, and the exact, but it's quite, it makes us even look not so old.
The answer.
Can I offer another theory as well, or another thing I think plays into this is the internet. I don't think we've taken into account. I think Trump has become the face of it and has kind of released the hounds. But I think this has been brewing on platforms like Facebook and and Twitter and YouTube for a long time. I view it as a lot of, the white nationalists and these other hate groups are mostly social outcasts. If you look at a lot of these mass shooters, they're young men who weren't able to establish a relationship with a woman. And they've all had these extreme views, and they were kind of, outcast, and suddenly they were able to find like-minded people on the Internet. And none of those platforms like Facebook have done anything. They've not taken their responsibility to remove this sort of stuff from their platforms or to diminish the amount of hate on the platforms. The example of the shooter in New Zealand, live streamed his mass shooting on Facebook, and now the platforms are all struggling to find a way to take it down. They can, if you show an interest in buying a pair of shoes, you'll be inundated on those sites with ads for shoes.
Right.
But they can't use that same technology to, cut down the hate speech.
Yeah, that's an extremely complex issue, because like when the Internet started, we thought, throw open everything to free speech. We thought equality. Everybody on the Internet looks and sounds alike. And it released this, the dark side, I guess, or the shadow side of the American psyche, as well as the positive side. So you see millions of very positive things on Facebook and everywhere else, but it also released, people who were isolated and, in the old days, you'd have to, if you were wanted to be a Nazi in America, I mean, you had to go miles and miles away to find another person who agreed with you. Now everything's available on the internet. And that means the reinforcement is stronger, right?
Right. Well, they live in a bubble, right? In the self-reinforcing loop, because the technology of Facebook is that they show you what you've already demonstrated that you're interested in. The answer to your question, Steve, is what can be done about it? Part of it is that we're already doing it, right? We're spreading the real truth as to what's going on. And our role, as Democrats is to just continue hammering away at it.
I want to expand on what Steve said, and it's very true. This is America, so we want everything to be in the public forum. We want the Nazis. We want the positive stuff.
Free speech, Mike.
Free speech. Thank you. I have had an experience with Facebook recently, in one of their more positive attempts. And when I say I've had an experience with Facebook, I actually chatted with an employee of Facebook. They hire people to do these positive things, or at least to encourage them. When they find them on Facebook, then they promote them, and they got.
You mean like cat videos?
Cat video, yeah, I guess. But this is something a little more, let's call it intellectual, but a little more intellectual than that. In this particular,
more intellectual than cat videos.
In this particular, that's yes, okay. I don't want to. I have cat friends, and they will hate me if I put down cat videos. But I cannot. They are the silliest. In this particular case.
So what is it that you're talking about?
A couple of billion viewers. This one elementary school principal was reading, using Facebook to read bedtime stories to her students. So all the kids would, and she would just do a simply live, which I want to do for the show, by the way. I have the tripod on the car. So next week, folks, look for Democratic Perspective on Facebook. We'll be doing a live feed from the studios right here in Chasm. But getting back to Facebook's positive attempts to do the balance you were talking about. So this elementary school principal is reading bedtime stories. People are using Facebook. This is a positive use of Facebook, not to spread hate, not to spread Nazism, not to spread all the wild ideas that they do. this nice elementary school principal reading bedtime. And so Facebook assigns somebody to this to promote it.
Why did they talk to you, Mike? Why did they contact you?
That's a valid question. I was a teacher of reading for many, many years. And so I had some authors that they were not aware of that were just so wonderfully impactful for children. A guy named Robert Munch, I would say his name on the air. He's a Canadian, of course. but he worked in American daycare centers, and he wrote some of the most wonderful children's books that have ever been. I watched him read to a room of 500 educators. He read one of his books, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house.
What's the name again, Mike?
Robert Munch.
Okay.
Spelled Kloss would be this M-E-U-N-S-C-M. It's got like 3,000 letters for a one-syllable word.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough.
I had an experience with Facebook recently. I wanted to promote the Sealy Lake Community Council meeting. And so I posted it, and I wanted to boost the post. I had to go through a week of digital interrogation, had to send them my driver's license and a whole bunch of other things before they finally gave
me. Let's explain what a boost is when you're trying to boost a Facebook post.
You pay
Kloss,
20.
A lot of people don't know.
Okay, you pay $20 and then your post just pops up more often than it otherwise would. And I had to really jump through a whole bunch of hoops that were a pain in the neck to be able to boost something as innocuous as the community council meeting, because their rationale now is anything that's of national or political importance has to be closely monitored, and they have to make sure that you are who you are. So they are trying to do it, and to what extent, you know, this will ultimately succeed on a broader scale, we'll see.
So doing a political post now, and if you want to boost it, that is by advertising for your political post. This was the way the Russians did a whole lot of stuff, as well as the other people spreading lies in the last election. And they boost the message. And so what Facebook is doing is now triple checking anything you do on that you want to boost anything, no matter in Kloss's case how harmless it is.
And it seems like they've selected a whole crew of skeptical people, as Kloss said, that you had to jump through a lot of hoops, and even in my case, even in my less innocuous case than his, it was a woman, and she had a woman's name anyway, and made me prove the value of this particular author, and I did. I was able to her satisfaction. Before she would even pass it on to the principal in this case.
So what do you think, Gary, about all of this? The Facebook's now cracking down. I expect they're going to make a lot of mistakes as well as do a lot of things right with trying to clear out this false news and propaganda from their outlet.
I think they really haven't taken it seriously enough yet. I think they are doing, you know, they're in the beginnings of doing something, but their algorithms are really good at assigning advertising to people who have searched for something. It can't be that much more difficult to search out hate speech and neo-Nazis, et cetera.
Well, that's the question.
I'd like to propose another possible culprit in this that will be controversial, but I think the churches have had a lot to do with it, especially the evangelical, mega churches. They're Trump's most ardent supporters. They've engaged in a lot of the hate against immigrants and refugees. You know, the traditional churches have embraced the refugees, but a lot of the evangelicals and Trump supporters have gone along with the hatred, and I don't think a lot of this is going to be resolved until the churches take it seriously.
Well, that's very true. I think
to put down
an almost an underground church movement, if you want to call it that, Because you hear it from religious people, even here in the Verde Valley, talking about that Islam and Christianity cannot live side by side. Islam is such a the tenets of the very basic religion, you know, make it incompatible with American life, because American life, as we all know, is Christian. I got to make this clear. That's ironic. That's a joke.
They used to say the same thing about Catholics. Catholics take orders from the Pope. This is when I was young, and therefore Catholics shouldn't be, even be allowed to vote or hold office. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I heard in rural Oklahoma.
Well, when we were marching in the Sedona St. Patrick's Day parade, chanting progression, not regression, as Democrats, that has more meaning. I think we have gone back 50, 60, 300 years when it comes to, you're saying Catholics used to be thought of as taking orders from the Pope? I think a lot of evangelicals, they still think that happens.
But it's not like the environment that I grew up in rural Oklahoma, in small town Oklahoma, where there was a tremendous amount of anti-Catholic sentiment all around us. And I think that's completely gone. I mean, I think, at least with the mainstream churches, they're not doing that stuff. I don't know what you do. I mean, if evangelicals have a right to their religion, but their religion has this shadow side of hating a lot of people, liberals, and it changes. They become politically correct in the sense they don't speak out obviously against
black
folks.
And that's fine as long as they pay taxes. Oh, wait a minute. They don't pay taxes.
I think the thing about evangelicals is that I haven't seen all that much hatred from them. What their rationale is that they're supporting Trump because their big thing is abortion for some reason that is not clear to me, because, love the fetus, hate the child, right? Because as soon as somebody's born, the Republicans have no more interest in supporting them, but they go haywire over abortion. And for evangelicals, that seems to be their main issue, and they've decided that they're going to put up with all of these things that are in sharp difference with their supposed conviction about marital fidelity, et cetera, because Trump will appoint the right judges. That's, I think
that's
evangelical,
partially true,
about.
But I think that the evangelical community is extremely complex and varied, and what's the most important to a particular group is not as much to the other. What I see is a kind of consolidation. The militia groups used to be anti-liberal. They hated liberals, they hated Clinton, they hated Obama, so forth and so on. And now it seems to me that they're combining their anti-immigrant, anti-liberal stuff with white nationalism, with open white nationalism. That is, in other words, white nationalism is spreading as an ideology to groups that was only peripheral to in the past. And so we're seeing a burst of it, so that the militias are becoming obvious white nationalists and saying they are, where in the past they were always against socialism or whatever else they could conjure up as an enemy. What disturbs me about a lot of religious is that, the history of the world is the history of the conflicts and wars that religious ideology can start, so that even the best religion has nothing. Well, I guess it's just not perfect, like the rest of humanity. Nothing we do, the politics is not perfect, our religions are not perfect, our social relations are not perfect.
Listen,
I'm struck by the irony with the evangelical Christians, that they celebrate a man who embraced the poor and embraced refugees and despised the wealthy, yet their views now are almost diametrically opposed. And I look at other religions, and I always admired a Buddhist for the fact that as far as I could tell in history, they have never been engaged. They had never engaged in war and violence, And yet now the Buddhists of Myanmar are committing genocide against Muslims. So it's a problem that seems to permeated, almost every religion. It's they too easily embrace the hatred for the dislike of others, of the others. And I think it's something that when you combine, the problems of immigration, for example, with the zealotry of religion, you end up with something that can be incredibly ugly.
True.
Well, the modern Christian God bestows his love on you by making you successful. A lot of Christian religions believe that, if not preached from the pulpit. It is certainly in many, many of their teachings that you will be rewarded. And we're talking about financially for your faith.
The most palatable religion that I've run across is the Native American religion, which isn't really a religion, right? It's just it's a spiritual way of...
Naturalism, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
It's not singular, anyway. It varies greatly.
And, exactly.
There's just as many interpretations if you're on the... given the population, if you're on one of the reservations, and as there is among other things. I mean, there are disagreements about what can do, and there'll be a fight whether white folks can take part in some of the sacred ceremonies or not. There are always arguments and discussions, and there have been for I guess since the beginning of all this stuff. But what I hate seeing is a religion twisted to just show the shadow side, just the fear side, just the them and us side. I think, to me, religion is great, but what happens is the old them and us, I, thou, you, me, the conflicts emerge in the religion and gets expressed as nationalism. And like you say, even in Buddhism, which actually Gary has, there have been some other violent hit parts in Japan of Buddhism, Buddhists fighting with each other.
Yeah, let's focus on the Beatitudes and the Psalms rather than all the other.
We got 2 minutes. Next week, John Hake will be talking about the economics of climate change. Last week we talked about the ethics of climate change.
Yeah, we're
going to be talking about it. And Mike and Klaus did a show where you guys talked about the Green New Deal, right?
We did.
And we'll do another show. We think it's important to do shows regularly on climate change. Michael.
Well, I just want to talk about Juan Cole, who was supposed to be on today and is going to be on in the future. And you guys want to check out this show. Juan, John Ricardo Cole was born October 23rd, 1952, is an American academic and commentator on the modern Middle East and South Asia. These are his specialties. He does a blog through Truthout, a website that I respect, called Informed Consent, as Steve mentioned, since 2002. Since 2002. So he's written 10 books, all on the Middle East. And if this is something you got some questions about, I think tuning into Juan Cole will help you answer a lot of those questions.
So he'll be on in April, I think, and we'll have another Middle East expert who'll be talking about the relationship of the military to the political government in places like Egypt.
And Mike, what can people do to support?
Yes, we have a donate button at Verde Valley Independent Democrats. You can put in all the words, verdevalleyindependentdemocrats.org. On my computer, as soon as I put in Democratic Perspective, it comes up right away. Lots of ways of getting to our website. You'll find this show and all our shows, and you will find this wonderful donate button. Help keep us on the air. Help keep Democratic Perspective going strong. Thanks, folks. See you next week.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.